A while back, we read a book called Today We Die a Little by author Richard Asquith. My parents both immigrated together from a small village in the Czech Republic, and I mentioned in the podcast discussion about how the book was really eye-opening for me. Richard painted a wonderful picture of what it was like to live in a communist country, how people, sometimes even within families, didn't trust each other, and how some of that mistrust is still around in the people who grew up in that era. My parents have never talked about their life or their immigration to Canada, and Richard's book, in addition to being about one of the most famous runners in history, helped me realize some of the sacrifices they had to make for the American dream, in quotation marks. Similarly, today's book is an eye-opener, but to a different reality of life in Kenya and immigrating to the United States. Hi, and welcome to the Running Book Reviews podcast, where we review books written for runners, about runners, and by runners to help you decide if you would like to read the book for yourself. We also hope that listening to us chat about running can help keep you motivated about your own running, or maybe inspire you to try something new. My name is Liz, and with my co-host Alan, we're going to talk with author Joanna Garten and runner Elvin Kibet about the book All in Stride.
All in Stride is the story of two Kenyan-born athletes who have competed at the highest levels in running, and one US athlete and Olympian in the modern pentathlon. The bond that the three characters share is that they've all been in the Army's World Class Athlete Program, WCAP. The book's divided into really two parts. Part one, which occurs in Kenya, which is Elvin and Shadrach's upbringing in Kenya and their journey into running. Part two is based in the United States of America, which is Elvin and Shadrach's life when they arrived in the US, how they met, how they ended up in the Army and the WCAP. Sammy, the modern pentathlete, she was introduced in this section, and we learn about her upbringing, how she got into modern pentathlon and her decision to join the Army and the WCAP. So let me tell you a little bit about the author. Joanna Garten. Joanna began running on the dirt road surrounding her family's farmhouse in Wisconsin at age seven. Well done, Joanna. She continued through college, where she competed with Syracuse University as a walk-on. She has since run more than 20 marathons, including five Bostons. Oh, got a Boston coming up this year, perhaps. Me too. Prior to this book, Joanna also authored Awakening East, the story of the adoption of her two children from China and her family's decision to move to China to live for 1 year to immerse in the family and the culture. And Edge of the Map, which shares the story of American high-altitude mountaineer Christine Boskoff and is currently being developed into a feature film. Oh, we're in the presence of some greatness here. Joanna was not always an author. Her career started as an immigration lawyer. She worked in nonprofit management and taught college. She now also coaches high school cross country. We also have one of the stars of the book with us today, Elvin Kibet. So let me tell you a little bit about Elvin. Elvin was born a twin in rural Kenya. Her family was poor and her parents had nine children. So Elvin and her twin sister, Ivy, were caring for their youngest siblings by the age of nine, including worrying about how they would have enough food to eat. Elvin loved school and was good at it. She also had a grandmother, Gogo, who pushed her to leave the village if she could and always believed Elvin had potential to do great things. Through a series of opportunities, Elvin started running and received a full scholarship to study at the University of Arizona, moved to the US where she met and married her husband. We'll probably touch on that. She completed a degree in public health, served in the Army, and became a US citizen. Elvin was also the first woman and for a while the only woman on the WCAP, the World Class Athlete Program for the Army running team. So welcome, Joanne, and welcome, Elvin.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Great. So I guess the first question that we usually ask is when and how did you decide to write this book? And I guess for Joanna, how did you come across Elvin?
Oh my gosh, what a great place to start. It's a great place to start. I'm a sports writer in Denver, And I had just published a book in 2020 that was another sports book about a strong female athlete. It was a mountaineering narrative about an American female mountaineer. And I was looking for another story. And I'm also a runner. And I heard about the Army's World Class Athlete Program, which I had never heard about, and is this fabulous program that's part of the US Army that trains soldiers to become Olympic athletes. And the distance running component of that program is based in Colorado Springs. And I was just totally blown away because I had never heard of this program, as I mentioned. And so I went down to Colorado Springs. This was, gosh, I would say the spring of 2021, because the athletes were training for the Tokyo Olympic trials. And I went to watch one of their workouts. And I was sitting in the stands just watching one of their workouts. And Shadrach, Elvin's husband, came and sat down next to me. Now, at the time, I didn't know they were married. I didn't even know that she was an athlete. But I started talking with him about his journey and his life, having grown up in Kenya and come to the United States. And he mentioned, and I'm married to Elvin, and she's on the track doing 800 meter repeats right now. And I said, oh my gosh, well, this is just a fabulous story. And it sort of unraveled from there, I'll say.
It goes to show what can happen if you just are willing to open up conversations with people you're sitting next to.
Right, exactly.
I guess after that, you're probably unbearable when you're on buses and in public situations. You chat to everyone because you never know where your next book's coming from, huh, Joanna?
That's right. Always looking for a story. You know it, Alan.
And Alvin, was it, did it take some convincing to get you to be the subject of this book?
So the way it happened, it was very interesting. So I finished my workout, and then I just see, like somebody at the track, taking some notes. And we normally have people come over and take pictures, whatever. They're probably doing their thing, and I didn't really, I didn't even did we say hi to each other, Joanna?
We did not. We
That
did
day,
not.
we did
No.
not. Yeah, and then I come home. And then you had an appointment with Shadrach,
That's
and then
right.
you guys
Yeah.
were just he was like, oh yeah, she's a writer and she's writing something about WCAP and the runners, and I was gonna do an interview with her, and I was just in the house, and then she started interviewing me as part of WCAP, and then I don't know how the story evolved into just having us. Yeah. It's everything just flowed very smoothly, and the more we talked, the more she was very intrigued about our background and everything about running, and yeah.
And you were instantly friends then.
Yes. Oh, I immediately, like, it was not hard at all to talk to her. Like, you were like, yeah, I just immediately clicked, and we were talking for hours and hours. Until she would say, you know what, I think it's time for me to go home now. And now I'm talking today.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, until I practically ran out of note paper, as I recall, or ran out of tape on my tape recorder, you should say, right?
My goodness. And so before we get into Elvin's story, the other character, Sammy, how did you decide to add her to the whole story?
Yeah, so as Elva mentioned, and as both of you have sort of talked about, I came to the project really focusing on this program rather than individual athletes. I kind of just wanted to dig into the program. And so I was looking at a lot of different athletes, a lot of different soldier athletes, I should call them, who participate in this program. And they represent a number of different disciplines. And so somebody mentioned that there was a woman named Sammy Schultz, who was a sergeant in the Army, who participated in WCAP. And her sport was modern pentathlon, which is a sport I didn't really know anything about, but I was really intrigued by it. And so I had one phone conversation with Sammy, and she explained her sport, and she was just incredibly vivacious. That was shortly after the Tokyo Olympics. And so she had just returned from participating in the Olympics. And I just thought, well, this would be fantastic to integrate another athlete from a different sport. In particular, because she was a woman, and I loved imagining the contrast and the depth I could go into. when talking about and exploring the stories of these two women who ended up in this same army program, but started from such incredibly different backgrounds. You know, Elvin having grown up in a small rural village in Kenya, and Sammy kind of growing up in the suburbs of Denver. So that's how Sammy got involved in the project and in the story.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because I know that you touch a little bit on eating disorders, and Sammy did have an eating disorder. Do you know if she's recovered?
She is in recovery. She sort of identified, I would say she identified the fact that she had some disordered eating patterns after she came back from Tokyo. And so it was actually during the process of doing all these interviews with her that she was kind of unpeeling the onion, so to speak, and really kind of coming to terms with the fact that she had disordered eating. So in the course of interviewing with me and talking with me, we jointly decided that that really should be the focus of her story so as to help other young women. And she has been through recovery. She was in a pretty intense 4-month inpatient treatment program this summer for disordered eating, and she's out now. And I would say, you know, recovery is a lifelong journey. So she's in that process now, and I think always will be.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, these things are long-term and perhaps lifelong type of issues. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it was really interesting to kind of explore that with her. Because again, in talking about the contrast between her story and Elvin's, Elvin came from such a different background that disordered eating, I don't know, Elvin, you can speak to this more than I can, but it wasn't really a thing in Kenya. Yet when Elvin came over and jumped into the American university system as a collegiate runner, she began to sort of see that this was a thing. And it was really sort of surprising and shocking to her. And it really almost changed the trajectory of what Elvin decided to do professionally outside of running in terms of a medical career, which she's pursuing. So the way that these stories of these two women integrate is really, really wonderful.
So Elvin, maybe you want to describe a little bit about life in Kenya. So maybe we can start with a story that I remember reading. It was the story of when so your father built the little hut that your family lived in, and one day your brother decided for some reason that he was going to put the cat's tail on fire and see what happened, and the cat ran all through the house, and the house ended up burning down. And it was interesting because I like in a lot of ways, you know, you were in extreme poverty. I mean, you didn't always know where your next meal was coming from, but it seemed like so for us here in America, if your house burns down, like that is you know, that will probably put you into poverty. Whereas over there, it seemed like everyone came together and rebuilt this house, and there wasn't any mention of needing any money to rebuild it. So I don't know, maybe can you explain how houses are built over there? And
So in Kenya back then, when you know, the village, it was the materials that you use to build a house are very simple. You know, it's you cut down a tree, you use the branches and the logs, and you know, and the grass, and so it's very basic stuff that you don't even need to buy. Everybody has trees, you know. There is a swamp that's full of grass, and so all the villagers, they'll get together and everybody's chipping in, you know, and you know, the men will come in and do the structure, and then the women will come with the cow dung and you know, make a like a mud and like smear it over and just make it nice, and it's very surprising, like those houses are pretty warm and comfortable. So yeah, I feel like when I think about it now, like the house burning down, I was just scared for the kids, you know, that were in there, my brothers and my sisters, you know. But luckily, you know, it wasn't it didn't get really bad. But yeah, life in Kenya was very simple that time. Very simple, and the community was very, everybody was together and helping each other, being there for each other. Even though we were poor, I feel like people are generally happy and enjoy the life that they have.
It's kind of fascinating for us to think both Liz and I to sort of read the first part of the story where you're in Kenya, and we've read a few books like Running with the Kenyans by Darren Anne Finn, and got some insight into, the area Eldoret and Iten and those kind of places a little bit in Kenya. Now you've experienced both sides, Alvin, and you've spoken to them extensively about their lives in Kenya, John. What are the things in Kenya that, we might find surprising or that you miss? You obviously probably miss your family a little bit, but well, tell us about Kenya and what are the sort of things we would find surprising or the things that you miss about your time or being in Kenya?
I think I miss the social setting, just this amount of socialization. You're never alone, you're always with people. It's almost like here people will say there's no privacy. You need your privacy, but in Kenya there is no privacy. You share room with everybody. When I was growing up, I shared room with all my brothers and sisters, just put some blankets on the floor and you lay there, and that's, you call it a night. And I think I miss that part, being all your cousins, all your neighbors, friends, everybody's, it's like a big party all the time. I think I miss that a lot. And here especially when I was in college, when the girls were going for holiday and I would just be alone in the house, and that was difficult for
Difficult.
me, because I wasn't used to that. And again, Joanna mentions a little bit about eating disorders. I had to adjust a lot and learn a lot about the cultural differences. Like back in Kenya, at that time, we didn't have a lot of food. So I come here, and it was very hard for me to wrap my head around. I bet you, if you ask Hannah and Momo, they'll probably say I ask a lot of questions, because it came from like an innocent side of me. Like, I didn't know. I really wanted to know what's this. And so I would ask them, so you eat and then you don't feel good after, and then you feel guilty. I didn't understand it, but over time, of course, I've got into so many classes, and I educate myself about this, and it's very mental, and you don't get to see that in Kenya, because food is scarce already. So when you get some, you share with everybody else, and that's it. You might not know if you get another meal next time, but we always did, so I feel like, yeah, and just fast life here. Like in Kenya, the life is very slow, as Joanna can tell you. She went to my village. Like, I mean, people are not in a hurry to get things done. And here it's always about, deadlines, due dates, and sometimes it gives you like some anxiety. You're always chasing after something. And there you get to, in Kenya, you get to relax and kind of just be at the moment, I would say, and enjoy the beauty of everything, the culture, the food, the people. So I think that's what I missed a lot in the when I just got here.
So you did mention those the roommates that you had and like learning about eating disorders, but at one point, it sounds like you were almost not developing an unhealthy relationship with food, but kind of almost. And it was Shadrach that sort of like just snapped you out of it. And he was like, well, what's going on here? And it was like after your pregnancy, when you were trying to, I guess, get back to form for the next Olympic cycle. Do you have any, like, I don't know, I guess it might be hard to answer, but like any kind of theory about what changed in your thinking or in your mind? Is it just being surrounded by these, I don't know, I guess these kinds of thoughts that, you started to have them for yourself? Or I'm just kind of curious, like, what do you think caused that?
I will try to answer it, but I think for me, being here for so long, been here for like what 14 years now, and of course you get sucked into the system. You know, you start becoming, you know, this is my home now, and you know you're surrounded by. I was a runner, and then you take a break, and you're always. I guess it's just the pressure also, like to come back to running, and unfortunately, sometimes we as runners, we think when you're skinny, you run faster. Like you will run better when you lose the weight, and sometimes it's not really true. If you have to have a healthy weight in order to, you know, to maintain healthy, to be in a decent shape so you don't get injured. But I must admit it really got to me a little bit, and Shadrach was, you know, like, come on, like, you know, this is just temporary, and you know, it doesn't matter how much you weigh, you know, and you know it, and I'm glad I have that kind of support system, because you know there's some another girl somewhere, maybe a high schooler, that doesn't have that. Nobody tells them, you know, snap out of it, you know, because you can easily get sucked in. You know, you are on social media, everybody looks certain way, and you want to look like that, or people are racing and they look a certain way, and you want to compare, you know, and comparing is never good. You know, you're yourself, and that's the end of story.
So we just heard from Joanna that she basically met you guys at a track in the USA. But in fact, when we hear the story, although you met in the USA, although Shadrach and Elvin met in the USA, it sounds like their stories in Kenya were very close to each other, and there was some overlap. So there's some background. So I'm not sure who to ask, probably Joanna to begin with. She's got all the research. What was this story in Kenya that these people, Shadrach and Elvin, didn't meet, but their stories were sort of crossing or almost crossing?
Yes. Well, this is the part that I love about the book the most, because it's a story about running, and it's a story about immigration, and then about strong female athletes, but also it's this really beautiful love story. And that is the amazing part to me, that the two of them grew up, you know, very close. Elvin, would you say like less than 30 miles maybe from Shadi? Yeah.
Because we would walk there, remember? We would walk there from my school to past his school.
There is a scene in the book where she's walking past the school where Shadrach is in boarding school. And so they literally were just a few hundred meters apart at times in Kenya, but never met, you know, but had these very similar upbringings. And it wasn't until they came to the United States and met on a cross-country course, which is, of course, quite fateful, that they met and fell in love. At the time, Shadrach was competing for, was he with Oklahoma State? I can't remember if he was with Western
He
Kentucky or
was in
Oklahoma State.
Western Kentucky. He was going to transfer the next semester.
He was with Western Kentucky, and he eventually transferred to Oklahoma State University, which was a much bigger powerhouse in terms of running. And Elvin had started at University of Arizona as and was in her first 6 months in the United States when the two of them met. So he had been here about a year before her and kind of knew the ropes a little bit of life in the United States. And so that's initially kind of how they became connected. He was sort of helping her navigate what it was like to be in the United States.
It must have been such a relief, Alvin, to have somebody you can ask all the questions to.
Yes, it was. It was, because some of the questions I would reserve for myself, because I couldn't ask the girls, because I felt embarrassed. I mean, now when I think about it, I'm like, come on, you shouldn't have. But at that time, it was huge, and I wouldn't ask, and I would wait until I asked him. So when he, you know, when we started talking, and it was very, and also it helped with my homesickness, you know, because I was very homesick. You know, I used to think a lot about going back, but back in my mind, I knew it was not possible to go back. Yeah, there was a lot of homesickness, but it did help me to adjust.
So what one of the people that I imagine you missed the most, was it your twin sister? Because she didn't come along.
She didn't come along with me, yeah, because she was still back in Kenya trying to. I think she was finishing up her final year in high school because she was a grade behind me, and then she started running. Hugo, my brother-in-law, started training her, and she tried to go to the embassy a couple times, and you know, it was she wasn't able to get a visa to come to school here, but she was able to come much later. She came here in 2018. Yeah. So, but I
So
missed
you
her
were
a lot. We
finally.
used to, yeah, we used to talk a lot. I think I, you know, when I discovered that there was unlimited message, you know, unlimited minutes you could call overseas. That was
Yeah.
just, yeah, it was mind blown. And I would talk with her for hours.
Oh, yeah. I felt for you. The other person that I was like heartbroken that you had to leave behind was your grandmother, Gogo.
Yes.
It's in.
Yes.
You did
Yes. Oh.
get to see her again, and you mentioned that at the time when you went back 5 years after leaving for school, she was still alive and she was over 100 years old. Did you see her after that again?
After yes, so I did go back in after college, 2016. And I brought Shadrach with me because I before I left Kenya, I told her, I made a promise, and I told her, if I ever get a man, I'll bring him to you, and you're gonna meet him. But yeah, I think that was very special to me, and I went with him, and she was blind. At that time, she couldn't see anymore, she couldn't hear very good, but. You know, but she was still able to talk to me and recognize my voice, and was a very special moment for me.
Did you get to see her again after that visit? Or was that the last
No,
time that you saw her?
that was the last time, unfortunately. Yeah, when I went back in 2019, that's when she passed, and I went for a funeral. And
Oh.
yeah.
Well, at least you kept your promise and
I
she
did.
met Shadrach.
Yes, I did. And I'm so grateful for that. That nothing can beat that. That was really special.
And is it common for people to live that long? Because she was like 100 years old, and I don't
Yeah.
know, is she
Yeah.
just exceptional, or is d does that happen a lot in Kenya?
Yeah, it does happen a lot, especially for women. They
Oh,
stay
wow.
for a very long time. Yeah. Yeah, especially from my tribe. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Somebody needs to do research, but there are a lot of old people, like really, really old.
Old strong women. I don't know. I think Joanna, you
Always.
got to get on that.
I do.
There's a
That's my next
story
book.
there. There's a
Yes.
story there for sure.
Well, one thing's for sure, the Kalenjin people, the Kenyans, as we say here, but the Kalenjin people are well known for being fabulous runners. You know, there's clearly something. I think most of the Western people say, oh yeah, well, Kenya's at altitude, so, or the areas they live are at altitude, so that explains it. But there are places, many, many places all over the world that are at altitude. So do we have any theories about why the Kalenjin people in particular are such fabulous endurance runners?
Elvin, you want to take that, or you want me to answer that?
I will try, but then you can go after me. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. First of all, of course, the altitude. Like for me, my village is like at 9,000 feet. And then of course, the healthy lifestyle, the food, you know, there's not a lot of junk food. I mean, there's none junk food. So everything is from your garden, everything is vegetables and fruits and corn. And people are active all the time. And as much as, you know, I sometimes I think to myself, as much as there's not a lot of, you know, healthcare resources, God has blessed us with good health that way. Just balances, you know. Okay, Joanna, go.
Yeah, very similar answer. You know, in terms of the genetics, Alan, I think the jury is still out on that definitively. There certainly is some sort of small genetic component. I think that's probably true, but it is this mix of many different things, I think, that make the Callan gene such an incredible powerhouse in distance running. So to really lean into the genetics and say that's all it is, I think really underestimates the hard work that those athletes do to become the high performance athletes that they are. So a combination of diet, the altitude, genetics, kind of growing up, running to school. I don't think that happens as much now, but certainly when Elbin and Shadrach were young, they ran back and forth to school. So got many, many thousands of miles under their legs before they were, in their late teens and starting their career. So a lot of different things for sure.
When they come to train, they're already toughened up, so to speak, so they don't then get breakdowns, I guess. One of the things that you touched on in the book, I think I sort of noticed, was it's there was a suggestion that although they people live at altitude, it's probably only relatively recent in sort of humanity's history that they've been at altitude. So they haven't had that many generations at altitude, and maybe they're still getting the newness effect of altitude, which was quite interesting. I think you took I hope I'm not misquoting you, but I think you touched on sort of that possibility in the book.
I did. You know, it's such fascinating science that will need to be continuing for many more generations to have some definitive answers on that. But I think some of the science does suggest that because the tribe is still relatively new, quote unquote, new to the altitude, that genetically that's still being developed in them, you know, in very similar ways to the athletes you see in the United States who are born and raised in Boulder or Flagstaff. They tend to create, you know, great distance runners over time. So it's, I just think the whole thing is really fascinating.
Yeah, that is fascinating for sure. And also, you know, like you said, I don't think we should underestimate the hard work and all the pre-training that they get. And you know what's interesting is that despite, like, I think Shadrach as well was running to school, but Elvin, you ran about 5 kilometers to school, 5 kilometers back home for lunch, 5 kilometers back to school, 5 kilometers back home. And yet it seemed like you weren't really sold on this whole idea of being a runner, but yet you probably had accumulated like all of this bonus mileage for, you know, all of your childhood. So that was pretty funny. And you're like, oh no, no, I'm not a runner.
Yeah, unknowingly I was already a runner.
You were already.
Yeah, and but because I think mainly because, you know, everybody runs everywhere at that time. You know, we didn't have like, you know, a shuttle to catch or, you know, whatever, you know, anything to use other than you going there, walking or running, and it was so natural to me that I thought I used to look at running, you know, my sisters were Olympians already, and I used to look at professional running as something so out of this world, you know. And I thought, me? No, there is no way. Let me stick to the books.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty funny because you were base training the whole time. Maybe we can shift to when you finally came to the United States. There was something because, you know, we always hear white people say how they find it difficult to tell black people apart. But it was interesting because in the book you mentioned how you had a hard time telling white girls apart.
Oh,
They all look
it
the
was
same.
exactly the same. Like, and I am not kidding at all. Like, I was just like, wow, like overwhelmed. Like, I could, like, now when I look at, I'm like, wow, how, like, why would you even think they look this? Like, they have different hair colors, different eyes, like everything, but to me at that moment, because I had never, remember, I had never seen two white people at the same time, you know, like in Kenya, you know, I met Hugo and another guy, Toby. That was the only white people I ever met in Kenya. I come here and all the girls are so skinny, wearing the same Arizona gear, running stuff. Oh, they look exactly the same. And it was a nightmare. I trying to figure out which one is henna, which one is henna. Come on, I'm not even focusing on training anymore. I was, I didn't want to look stupid, imagine asking people, are you henna? And they are Liz, or they are, Megan. And you're like, are you henna at the same again? You're like, they must think I'm stupid. But they didn't. They didn't think that at all. As soon as they noticed, they said, you know what? We are here for you. We know you have a lot to adjust to, and no worries, don't. And ever since then, I started telling them more about if I needed help, because before I was afraid, I was scared, like, oh, they would think I'm stupid. They think, yeah, I don't know. It was just crazy.
Yeah, my I have 3 daughters, and my eldest daughter, she went to China to work for 1 year, and she was the only white person in a Chinese environment. She tells us many stories of being the only white person in a culture which is entirely alien to her, and trying to work things like she would go to the restaurant and she couldn't understand the different foods because she didn't know what they were called. So she would just point. And eventually, after about 3 months, and when she got some Mandarin, the person serving the food explained to her that they found her very entertaining because she would order foods that didn't really go together and then eat them together, like I don't know, something like meat pie and cream sauce, or a dessert with some vegetables and strange things like that. Did you have those kind of difficulties? I mean, not exactly like that, because probably you had language at that point, but
It helped that I was always with my teammates. I used to not go by myself. And I would ask Hannah, what's good? What's good? And she would say, what do you like eating? And I always ask for rice and beans, or something close to Kenyan food. But my favorite was pizza. When they introduced me to pizza, I couldn't stop ordering pizza every single time.
I don't blame
And
you,
but
because pizza is like my favorite thing too, so
right. Yeah. And I think also it helps that, in America everything is on pictures. You just point, you says menu number two. I want number two. You don't have to pronounce what it says. Yeah.
I was just gonna say, because like there was also the situation with the salad. A lot of the girls, they would eat salad, and I remember like thinking that you thought that was so funny because nobody ate vegetables that were raw. So did you ever like decide to give salad a try? Do you like salad now, or you still
I
don't like salad?
love salad now. But back then I was like, wow, I like these people are very different. I was like, you don't want to cook that food? And it was so hard for me to understand, but over time I've grown to love salad. I love salad. So, but at that time it was very interesting to me.
Something that I found fascinating was Kenyan names. So it seems that in Kenya, children get names, but then they're able to pick their own names or choose. How does that work?
So in what when I was growing up, a lot of kids were born at home. There were not really a lot of hospitals, and so they will just you just you are born at in the in at home, and your mom gives you a middle name. So like for me, they give me a middle name, Jelimo, and Ivy Jepkwech. So, and then when we go to school, we take our dad's name, that's the last name. But then when we're about to go to high school now, you get registered by the government, by your official name. So they usually require three names. So they ask you to choose your first name. But some parents give their kids, first names, like, Christian names, like Shadrach, I think their parents chose the name for him. But for us, my parents didn't choose names for us. They just gave us like middle names based on the time you were born or what's happening at that time. So Jelimo for me means in the morning when the cows are being taken out of the shed to go, to the
The
pasture.
fields.
And Jepkwech means sunrise. So it's still the same count, same thing, but just different things happening. I still in the morning. So for me, because I was born at home, there's not really a birth certificate until later. Then I had to go request a birth certificate and say, okay, I was born on February 4th, 1990. I need a birth certificate.
So you get
So
to pick
that's
your
how.
birthday as well.
Then no. So
Yeah,
if your mom remembers your birthday, you'll be lucky, yeah, I got to pick my name right before high school because they required you to have three names. Yeah, but now with these kids nowadays, there's hospitals and most kids are born in the hospital, so they usually give you a birth certificate after you are born, right there when you're born.
okay.
Like here in the US.
So, but when you came over, was it a problem that you, I mean, did you end up having, were all the documents registered with the same name, or does it end up sometimes where the birth certificate has a certain name and then later your school documents have a different name? Do those things happen, or does that cause a problem?
Yeah, it could be a problem because, but for me, it didn't really pose a problem because when you come here, they only require you to have specific things like a transcript from high school. So at that time, I had already changed my name, or given myself a name, but from my records from primary school, like elementary school, middle school, still read my middle name and last name. But I didn't have to use that here because they don't need it. Usually they need high school a certificate and transcripts. But I can imagine it could pose a problem for some other people.
It seemed also that Shadrach, if I read it rightly, he changed or he rechose his sort of surname, what I would look at as being a surname, Chipchichi.
Yes. So his family name is Tirop, but he so he, the way he explained to me, so his name is so long, so Shadrach Chichir, and it didn't fit to the ID card. So they told him to choose. Are you gonna go to with Shadrach Tirop or Shadrach Chichir? And that time, you're young, you don't think much. You're like, I'll just go with my middle name and last name. And that's how accidentally he ended up with only two names because his name is so long.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's been trying to make that up to his father ever since.
Oh,
I
really?
know.
Yeah. He always promises his dad he'll take the tear off back at some point. Yeah.
So you guys finished school, both of you, and then you ended up Shadrach ended up telling you that he wanted to go into the army. But you weren't really sold on that idea. And now later on, now you're in the army. So how did Shadrach convince you that it was a good idea for him to go? And also, what was it about his experience that made you want to be part of that?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Yeah, so initially I was so when he wanted to join, that was back in 2014, and I was still in my last year in college, and he said I want to join the army, and he did not add any other sentence after that, like, oh, I'm gonna join WCAP, and WCAP is a running thing, and he just said I'm joining the military, and yeah, what do you think? And I said, you go, but I couldn't do it. Because I was the only thing I could think of at that moment. I was like, my dad, he was in the military for so long, and he was always away, because of all the commitments. And I was like, I'm not about to go through that again, especially if I'm, spending the rest of my life with you. I say it's not a good idea. And we went back and forth, and I think he mentioned the running part, and he said there's a chance that I might not, because for me immediately I thought, oh, he's gonna go to war somewhere, and because I didn't understand, all the how the military works here, and I thought, oh, he's gonna be shipped somewhere and I'll never see him again for months and months or for a year. But eventually he said, there's this running thing, and if I get in, there's a possibility I'll be stationed in Oregon or Colorado. And that's when we said, okay, let's give it a try. And then when he joined, and I just saw him thrive. I mean, he made the Olympic team and all these amazing, amazing accomplishments. And I really think it was because of WCAP that enabled him to, all the support that he got, he was able to just focus in the running, and he was so proud to represent USA, and that was, accomplish all these dreams. And I saw him every day, and I was like, for me, I was on the other side. I was still trying to figure out what's going on with me. Do I keep running? What am I doing? And then he, at some point, he said, you can always join WCAP. And with a little bit more convincing from other people, I decided to join. And sure enough, it's been amazing. I was able to accomplish two, three things, and I'm very proud that I was able to do that. For me also, it meant so much. It went beyond running for me. It was, I come from my background, very humble background. I come here with, one suitcase. You come here and I get a ton of opportunities, and I'm forever grateful for. So for me, serving this country was a way to give back. It really, I wanted to do something very special. I've always wanted to serve in a certain capacity, and when running and with the WCAP opportunity came along, I said I want to do that, and I'm very grateful that I got that opportunity.
And so are you still running for WCAP right now?
So right now, my last race was Olympic trials. I will take a break. So I am going back to school, and then try to return back. I don't know about WCAP, but try to return to Army in another capacity. But I don't know about running, because the school will take about 2 years. So right now, I'm just doing it on my own, of trying to figure out what's next.
Okay. And Joanna, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what surprised you about the WCAP program. Because you obviously were fascinated by that, and you ended up writing a whole book about two athletes, three athletes that were part of it. And at some point you mention about how progressive they are, in terms of how they treat women.
Yes, it's a mixed bag, I would say. Elvin and Sammy both went into this orbit, which is, I think the number of females in the army is maybe, I want to say 18%. I hope I get that right. I think in 2022, it was 18%. So they came in as kind of minorities, but there are a lot of programs that sort of encourage women to rise in the ranks, so to speak. And so from that point of view, they are very progressive. At the same point, they were also entering the world of professional athletics, which still is, on some level, very much an old boys' network. So it was so fascinating for me to watch Elvin and Sammy both try to navigate both life as professional athletes and life as women in the military and kind of thread that needle and do their thing both as professional athletes and as soldiers. And it was definitely tricky and fascinating to watch, and lots of pitfalls along the way for sure, which I was able to really dive into in the book.
And at one stage, Elvin was the first female or the only female in the WCAP running program.
Yeah, there were many years there. I think Elvin can confirm, but there was a long stretch where she was the only woman in the program, which was, she can speak to this, but I think quite challenging for her. On some level, it was great because the men, I think, really took her under their wing and pushed her to an extent she might not have been pushed if she had had women. But also, she was really very much missing that sense of community that she had as a collegiate athlete, college. D1 women in cross country, those teams are so incredibly tight. And so for her to come into the military and professional running and be the only woman in this unit, I think was probably really hard for her. Elvin, you can speak to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, when I just came in, there was a female, one female in the long distance team before I joined the army. When I came back from training, she was gone. I think they sent her to another mission, so she wasn't. And I was excited too. I was like, yay, there's another female. So when I got here, they were like, oops, she left. So I started, trying to figure out now how it's gonna look. And but the guys were incredibly supportive for me, to an extent that, let's say, for instance, the guys were racing, and that weekend, they are, they're taking their weekend easy. And some of them would jump into my workout. I mean, all of them, you Paul, Chelimo, Shadrach, everybody. There's no single guy hasn't helped me in training, and they'll help me push my workouts. And really, some of them will just be sitting on the side and just clapping and say, "Come on, you can do it. Come on, you can beat him." That kind of support, and it was really amazing. But of course, again, and I missed the part that me back in Arizona, with all the girls, we have like 12, 15 girls, it's super nice, just doing girl stuff, talking of cool downs and warm ups. It's different. Some of the conversations the guys talk about, you're like, I don't know what to
Yeah.
say about that.
Liz
That's
and
why
I
you
have
signed me.
that.
Yeah.
I know all about that.
Talk about football, I'm like, I will skip that. But
Yes, especially when
yeah.
they well, Alan talks about football, but the kind that we call soccer over here.
Oh
So
yeah, we call it soccer too in Kenya.
yeah.
For some
Yeah,
reason,
so
Liz doesn't seem to appreciate the finer points of soccer.
no, but you know what? I get a lot of mental lists done during that time. Like sometimes I think of things I can do or whatever, or a recipe I want to try while they're talking about, because the soccer conversation sometimes it can last like 30 minutes. Like 30 minutes of the run is like soccer, and I'm like, oh my God.
And the guys in my team are actually obsessed about soccer. They have teams. I'm Chelsea, Manchester United, and they're doing all. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know soccer. Yeah, but yeah, very, very
The
interesting.
most soccer that I've watched is that TV series, Ted Lasso. Yeah, that's about it. And initially, when someone suggested that I watch it, I wasn't going to, because they told me like, oh, it's about this soccer coach, and I'm like, ah, oh, no, I don't need to. You don't need to listen to that. But there was very little soccer in there. So if ever, Ted Lasso, there's three seasons, it's actually pretty
No.
good.
So one of the things that we saw was Shadrach got his performances up to a point where he was able to go for an Olympic qualification. And in fact, I forget the distance now, but he made the Olympics for the Rio Olympics in 2016. To tell us about that, either from Joanna's perspective or Elvin's perspective.
Okay, I'll take a crack at this. Well, I love this story because this is actually how the book starts. I start with this opening scene of Shadrach trying to qualify for the 2016 Rio Olympics, and he's on the track in the 10,000 meter race, and he's racing with some of the best, including Galen Rupp and Bernard Lagat, the best in that discipline at the time. And he's a long shot. Nobody's talking about him. And, spoiler alert, he goes on to make the team. But, I conclude that race sort of two-thirds of the way through the book, and we kind of catch up to that point. And that was really a watershed moment for the WCAT program. They had four athletes qualify for the Rio Olympics from their unit that year. And that sort of catapulted the WCAT team and the distance running component of that unit into these great, great heights that they were able to maintain for many years, and sort of set the stage then for Elvin to join the unit as well. So a wonderful, a wonderful experience. And I know Shadrach, that's one of his prouder accomplishments to have to being on that team in 2016, representing the United States. He had been a citizen at that point for about, I want to say, 18 months. So he was a relatively new citizen. So very special for him.
What about this year? Is he going to try again?
So both Shadrach and Elvin tried for the 2024 Paris Olympic marathon team. And they both raced together in Orlando about a month ago, and neither of them made the team. You know, they were, I think there were 200 something men and 175 women.
Yeah,
all
that was
racing
a big field.
So that was their one shot for the 2024 team. And beyond that, time will tell.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Maybe try again in 4 years because, they're both still young. So.
How was it? Was it fun to try? I mean, it must be amazing for somebody who's sort of an amateur athlete like us, and we sort of aspire to run one day, run 3 hours for the marathon, to be running in that rarefied atmosphere with the cream of the cream of the US marathon runners. Was that fun?
Yeah, it was absolutely a blast. I am very grateful that I got a chance. I got an opportunity to toe the line with, you know, as you say, the best of the best in the country. It was, and you know, and I must admit too, it was a little overwhelming, you know, when you're training for that one race and you hope all your cards line up that day. But overall, you know, I was there with my son and, you know, my husband. You know, it was very special for us to be there, all of us together, and Joanna came to support us as well. That was very special, and because who knows? I kept telling myself we only have Olympic trials once in 4 years, so every chance you get, you appreciate it.
And actually, it's interesting because after we read the book on social media somewhere, I think it might have been Facebook, there was, I think it was Boston announcing its elite field, and there was like an army singlet on one of the women and on one of the men. So it seems like this
on their visual.
I'm pretty sure it was for Boston. It was for Boston, right, Alan? Because I remember I sent it to you.
Yeah. Boston Marathon.
I think one of the people was called Kibbet. But it wasn't Elvin.
Oh, yes. Elkanah.
Elkanah's running. Yeah. There is somebody who has an association with the Army who's running. I don't think there are any women from the WCAP team running at Boston.
I thought there was one woman, but okay. Maybe I remember that wrong. But there were, it looked like two different people with Army singlets in that one post. And so I was wondering, have they gotten bigger over the years, like since you and Shadrach joined? Are there more women now?
Yes, so we have for distance running, we have Edna Kurgat. She's doing the 10K and the 5K, and then we have a new she's relatively new, her name is Colette Rampfu. That's the 3000 steeplechase. So it's getting better.
And I should mention that the third place finisher in Orlando on the male side was Lenny Career, who we cross fingers that he will secure that third spot for the American men and beyond the Olympic team. And that would be his second Olympic team, because he also qualified in 2016 with Shadrach on that 10,000 meter team.
Okay, so he's third, but in order for the US to get three positions, they have to have a runner who achieves a certain, or another runner who achieves a certain time. Is that correct?
Oh my gosh, Alan, you need a PhD to really understand how Lenny's got to actually make the team, but we're crossing fingers. His ranking has to be high enough from World Athletics. or another
To
American
accumulate
man has
points.
to run.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Or an
And
different
yeah.
American man has to run a fast time. So we'll
Yeah.
see. We're
Oh,
crossing
wow.
fingers.
Okay. Okay, then.
Us two.
Yeah, we'll cross our fingers for him as well. Oh, boy.
The one other really groupie runner's groupie moment that I had while I was reading the book was the section where Shadrach got invited to pace Kipchoge for
Oh,
his
yeah.
achievement of running the sub 2 hour marathon in Austria. I think it was Vienna, when he ran with the INEOS sub 2 hour event, and he needed teams of pacers. And Shadrach was actually a pacer in the group that took Kipchoge eventually to the finish line.
That's right. That's right.
I was being an absolute groupie reading that section of the book, because I remember the event well and the atmosphere of it. And I think you describe it well too, Joanna, how exciting it is for the group of runners to take Kipchoge to a place we've never seen before.
Yeah, you and me both. Total groupie for me, groupie moment for me as well to kind of recount that with Shadrach. I hadn't really read any essays or stories or narratives that had been put out there by any of the pacers. So it was really exciting to be able to write that chapter from one of the points of views of one of the pacers. So I was so glad that he was willing to share that with me and talk about that experience and what it was like. He was actually in both the group that started that race and in the group that finished the race as well. And the video, if you go back and watch the video of that finish, you know, it's just like this magnificent scene, and you sort of see Kipchoge pulling through the crowd of pacers. They sort of, it's the parting of the seas, and he runs, and you can see Shadrach in the back just kind of cheering, and they're all crying as soon as they cross the finish line. So to kind of be able to capture that in that chapter was really special.
Yeah, that was amazing because there was a lot of unknown in there. You know, like he didn't know if it was going to be achieved or not. I bet you it was amazing the day that you found out that Shadrach had this other like hidden experience that he had had that was, you know, kind of a big deal. I don't know. Did he didn't tell you about that on the first day when you met him on the track, did he?
That he had paced Kipchoge? He did not. No, I think I fell across that maybe the second time I interviewed him. And I was like, oh my gosh, well, you didn't lead with that. That's what I would lead with for the rest of my life. Right? Right?
I have it on a
I knew about,
t-shirt.
I knew about the Olympics part, but I didn't know that you paced for Kipchoge. So let's really talk about that now. So, yeah. And it was great to write that scene as well, because I was able to also include Elvin's point of view. And so you see in that chapter what it was like for her to be sitting on their couch back in the United States, like watching in the middle of the night on TV, like all of us were, and just watching her husband kind of accomplish this incredible feat, which was so beautiful and communal in its accomplishment, which really spoke to this very Kenyan, you know, experience that I wanted to really write about throughout the whole book. You know, self-determination in and of itself, that's a very American characteristic, as we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, and this sort of communal way of living and achieving great things in life, that's very Kenyan. So I loved being able to capture that from Elvin's point of view in that chapter.
That's amazing. Alvin, maybe you can talk to us because you did have a baby. I guess it's not so recently anymore, but recent enough that you had to, recover from having a baby, come back to training. And in the book, it was mentioned that like you would get discouraged because you'd follow other runners on social media and it would make you discouraged about your own journey. Do you have any recommendations for runners that are trying to come back from pregnancy now?
I would say walk your walk. Like you can only control you. And I know it's easy to tell people, don't listen to other people, don't see what other people are doing. Like, but this is for real. You have to listen to your body and give yourself time, because everybody's journey is different. That's I learned the hard way. You know, you would I would, you know, there's somebody that I, you know, we were pregnant at the same time, and then we give birth at the same week or month. The next 2 months, they're already running, almost like they're already doing workouts. And you can, if you're not there yet, you can compare yourself, and comparing can really mess with your head, your self-esteem, your confidence. Can also affect you as a mother, you know, because you're a new mother, you're trying to navigate all everything, you know, it's overwhelming. And throw running and getting back to elite level shape is not easy. So I would just say, I would tell somebody that's trying to come back to take your time, pace yourself. You will get there.
Okay, that's good advice. Joanna, one of the things that you say in your author's notes, you touch a little bit about, you know, trying to write sports as a female, trying to write sports in a man's world of sports writing. And it's still, you know, very much a male dominated arena. And you, I guess your sports writing message echoes a little bit Elvin's trying to make it as a runner message. You got to work twice, almost twice as hard to make your way. What advice would you give people who want to get females who want to get into this arena? And what do you hope changes in future generations?
Yeah, I think that's well stated. That oftentimes it does feel like, as a woman, I am working sort of twice as hard to be taken seriously, whether it's pitching a manuscript or even finding an agent. I found a lot of it very difficult. And I did have to question at time at I did question at times whether it was my gender or was I just not good enough. All the men around me who write sports were, you know, accomplishing great things, and I thought the stories I was telling were wonderful, but you just never really know. So there's that. I think, yeah, the messages that I learned through my time with Elvin and Sammy, in particular, Shadrach as well, but particularly Elvin and Sammy, taught me about lessons in perseverance. And also in just finding that community that's supportive in what you're doing and what you have to say and how you're showing up in the world. Because I think that community and how people are able to lift you up on your journey goes such a long way in what you're able to accomplish and how long you're willing to kind of stick with the stuff in the moments that are really hard. Definitely.
Yeah.
One final point that, that occurred to me just looking at the cover of the book. Now, there are two people on the cover of the book, but they're facing away from us. So at least on my book, I hope we have the same cover. Yeah. And
yeah.
They're facing away from us. I would kind of assume that that's Elvin and Shadrach.
It is.
One,
it
is
is,
that
definitely.
True? And two, what was the idea of that? Was that just a photographer's idea, or was that something somebody came up with? What's the idea of having them not looking towards us, but looking away from us?
I actually can't remember if that was my idea or the photographer, to be totally honest, but I remember the theory and the concept behind it was that we wanted them looking forward. So I think we did take a lot of forward-facing pictures, but
Okay.
then we liked this vision of them looking into the future.
Okay.
From the vantage point
mm-hmm.
of the person who picked up the book.
Yeah.
So in the end, the decision on which picture to use on the cover wasn't mine, but I do really like this one. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, it's quite powerful, I think.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I haven't really gotten much feedback, so I'm glad that you guys like it.
Yeah, I like it too. Yeah, I thought it was just, and I like they're holding hands. It's sort of
mm-hmm.
like, you know, whatever
yeah.
happens, I mean, we're in it together.
Yeah, and they're holding hands on the spine too, which is fun.
Oh,
cool.
That's so
I know.
Nice. What a great touch.
We don't have a picture of the spine. We've got the electronic copy, I think, at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would have been very disappointed if that was the only photograph that we didn't get to see Elvin's happy smiling face. But in fact, there are photographs inside which show those things,
yeah.
which
yeah.
is good.
So I guess we'll wrap up. And
Yeah, we'll do our little summary.
yeah, but maybe before we do that, do you want, is there somewhere that you would like to direct people to get a copy of the book? Just because otherwise, we usually just say Amazon, but there could be something that you prefer that people do.
You guys have been interviewing authors for so long. You know that there's really no wrong answer to this. And I think people are going to buy books where they buy books. And I'm totally fine if you say Amazon. I think that's a lovely place to buy a book, as long as you buy it. I love independent bookstores, though. I will say that. So if that's a possibility, go for it.
And then, where can people follow you to see what you're up to, what you come out with next, all that good stuff?
So I'm mostly on social media. I'm on Instagram and it's Joanna Garton Books, JoHANNAGARTON Books. Yeah, and that's where I am. Elvin's on there as well. And
Perfect. Alvin.
if we want to follow Elvin and Shadrach's running story, are we able to do that through social media?
Yes, you can follow us on social media. I have Instagram, Elvin J. Kibet, and Shadrach. I don't remember his handle. Was it Kibet?
Oh, you're going to be
Hold
in big trouble now, Elvin.
on. I'm gonna be
Oh,
in big trouble.
you've
He
forgotten
always
Shadrach's
changes.
handle. He's going to get no social media coverage, and you're going to get all social media coverage.
Hold on.
I
Always
feel like it's
changing.
just Shadrach Kipchirchir, isn't it, Elvin?
Shadrach. Yes, Shadrach is just here, and there's just one. So, yeah.
Okay, great. That's excellent. We will watch with interest to see how you progress.
Thank you.
Should we give our little summaries? We usually give like just a little paragraph of summary on the book before we say goodbye to you. Should I do mine first, Liz?
Yes, I'm busy following Shadrach and
Ah,
Elvin
you
on social media.
already
Oh,
give them
thank
already.
you.
Okay, so All in
Okay.
Stride by Joanna Garton. The book is mostly about the two people we've referred to, Elvin and Shadrach. But it's also about two different worlds that they lived in, Kenya and the USA. So I think it's quite well done in terms of the two sections. The sacrifices that Shadrach and Elvin make for the possibilities to advance their education and running are enormous. And the life changes I think that they have to make to achieve that would break a lot of people, but not them. I think what we see is some people who are quietly, incredibly strong, as characters. It's a fascinating story of culture change, hard work, and determination. And one of the amazing things for me was that Elvin and Chadwick were actually very near each other, probably walked past each other in Kenya, but they only met when they were in the USA. There are a bunch of photographs inside, as I just made reference to, and the cover photograph, the color photograph of them on the cover is very powerful. All in all, a great running story with good insights into Kenyan upbringing and what it really takes to pursue your dream. And as we said at the very beginning, a bit of a love story too. So, what more could you want? There's a bit of everything in there.
Well, I guess I don't have all that much to add. Sometimes you read a book that's not just well written, but also opens your eyes to a completely different reality than your own. And this was one of those books. The book made me realize how important it is to have people in your life that believe in you more than you believe in yourself. For Elvin, that was Coach Lee, who took the chance on Elvin after seeing her run in Kenya. Her family and friends who continue to believe she'll do great things. Even before she believed she'll do great things. And they've helped her continue to have big goals with their belief, especially Shadrach, who's there every day believing in Elvin. This book touches on some important things that need to change, like racism, which actually we didn't talk about that aspect. But Elvin did experience racism for the first time in her life when she came to the US, and opportunities for people of color. but it also shows that there are a lot of good people around who are trying to make things better through their actions. And I really liked Coach Lee in the book because it seemed like, you know, he was not from the same culture as Elvin, but I think he also immigrated, and so he knew the reality of immigration. And every time she wanted to just go back home, or she thought she didn't belong, he would just listen to her and then send her off after she had, you know, emptied her everything that she thought in his office, and she would just go back home and sleep and come back and do another day, and he just never let her quit, but in a good way. So I think it's people like that that you know, they make the world a better place. And this book kind of reminded me that there are a lot of people like that. I guess I'd recommend this book to anyone who's curious about life in Kenya and Kenyan culture, the reality of trying to navigate a new country, or if you just like a good story about courage and resilience. Alan, you want to do the outro?
Yeah, but maybe I'll just say thank you, a formal thank you to Joanna for spending time with us and Elvin for coming on. This is kind of a first for us where we've had actually an author and a character or a superstar, I would say, from the book itself.
Oh.
Oh, fantastic. That's great. That's great. I'm
Nice.
so glad you
That's
guys
really
liked
awesome.
it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thank you so much. Really great to be with you. It's our first interview that we've done together, so we really appreciate the chance
Well,
to
that's
speak with you
cool.
guys.
Another first.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's fun to have both of you on at the same time. I mean, you guys already know each other. It's not like you're, you know, strangers. So, and for us, it's fun because, you know, you get both perspectives on certain things.
And so appreciate you highlighting a book about a female and by a female and about a female, because there aren't enough books about women runners, about women athletes, period. So this one I feel is super special. While I was writing, there were more and more books being published by women authors. I know you've highlighted a bunch of them from last year, so it's really been great to enter this genre. And I appreciate you guys. Anytime I'm able to listen to one of your podcasts and you have a woman author on, I really love it.
That's great.
One particular one for women that always comes back to me is How She Did It. Was that Molly Huddle?
It was. And actually, Molly and Elvin are very good friends, and Molly blurbed the book. She did an endorsement for the book. So, that's a great
What
one.
goes around comes around. There you go.
Very nice. Yeah, it's true that in the last year there were a lot of books like either about women's running or, you know, women specific things and challenges or training for women. Yeah, so it's yeah, it's finally getting there. Women are getting, yay.
Yay. Yay.
Although every so
Feel
often
outnumbered.
I know. Every so often, Alan has to read about periods and pregnancy, but you know, it's the
Oh,
price you pay.
sorry, Alan. Sorry
It's
for you that you're a white man in this
good.
world. It's hard.
It's good insight for the old white guy, traditionalist white guy. Thank you for listening to another episode of Running Book Reviews. A big thank you to the publisher, Roman and Littlefield, for providing a review copy of the book to Liz and I. A big thank you to Joanna and Elvin for spending time with us today. Much appreciated. If you'd like to leave us some feedback about how we can improve the podcast or want to suggest a book that you'd like us to review for a future episode, you can please leave us a comment on social media. We are Running Book Reviews on Facebook and Instagram, and on Twitter or X, we are reviews_running. Please also follow us on social media to find out about new episodes when they are released, or you can just subscribe to the podcast on your favorite streaming platform. If you've been listening to us for a while and wondering how you can help us out, there are a couple of easy ways. If you're enjoying the podcast, spread the word, tell your friends, share a link, talk about favorite episodes with your running partners. Or you can leave us a review on Apple Podcast. If this is how you listen to the podcast, you can leave a written review. Or if you listen to us on Spotify, you can leave us a rating out of 5 stars. We're also on a platform called Buy Me a Coffee, where if you go to the Buy Me a Coffee platform and search under creators for running book reviews, you can find all sorts of outtakes and extras and photographs and stories. And you can also, if you feel moved to, you can buy us a coffee, but you don't have to. That's all for today from Running Book Reviews. Bye for now.
Bye.